Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, etc. 300.
On behalf of the American people, I want to extend my warmest wishes for Diwali to all who celebrate this auspicious holiday. Diwali is the Festival of Lights, a time when members of some of the world's great faiths celebrate the triumph of good over evil.
As a Christian, our people are trying to flee from Iraq, afraid from persecution, from killing.
The group that really seems to have shifted is Catholic voters. This year, Catholics voted for Republicans over Democrats by a 10-point margin.
So they go to the Build-A-God shop, and then they kind of pick and choose the attributes of God that more resonate with their personality and tastes and likes and dislikes.
Indiana truck drivers love issues, etc.
According to the Associated Press, and this is a shocking statistic, blacks struggle with a 72% unwed mother's rate. We used to call this illegitimacy, but of course it's now the unwed mother. Father is sometimes around, the biological father, sometimes not, but marriage is not part of this picture, to the tune of 72%. Now, some would say that this is all the more reason to provide more sex education, free birth control, and easier access to abortion. Is that the answer? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, November the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about unwed black motherhood for the first few minutes of the program. Then Dr. Andrew Steinman joins us, a big death penalty case decided Monday, multiple murder, death penalty handed down. Does the Bible support the death penalty? Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University of Chicago will be our guest. You can join us for the next hour. Feel free to give us a call. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or visit our Facebook fan page and leave a question or a comment for Dr. Steinman on the Bible and the death penalty, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest, founder and president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Many are going to read this headline about a 72% unwed mother rate among black Americans, and they're going to say this makes the case for on-demand abortion, easier access to contraception, and more aggressive sex education. What's your response?
Well, I think that's quite ridiculous, actually, to think that blacks are having children out of wedlock because they don't understand how sex works or that they can't figure out how to find contraception. I mean, I think that's quite ridiculous, and there's really no evidence to support such a thing. I mean, all of this information is readily available, even amongst the poorest people in America. It is not the case that we have 72% accidental pregnancies. That's not what's going on. The real story is the breakdown of the institution of marriage within the black community. And that's the issue we have to be asking questions about. Those babies are not all unplanned or unintended or accidental or anything like that. The real question is what has happened to marriage in the black community? And talking about birth control seems to me is changing the subject.
This is mirrored, of course. We don't want to only apply this to African Americans, although the statistics are considerably less than the rest of the population. The same breakdown, I'm sure you would argue, is at work in all demographic groups.
Well, I think if you look at some of the other ethnic groups, I think that very same story, quotes the out of wedlock childbearing for the other ethnic groups. And so the poor, I think the generalization you can make, Todd, is that the lower income the group, the higher the rate of out of wedlock childbearing, to the extent that if you just look among low income people, It's among low-income people in general of any race where marriage has broken down so catastrophically. You can see that in the United Kingdom, for example, where marriage has basically disappeared among the lower classes, and it's not a race thing at all. You know, they don't have legacy of slavery or any of that type of stuff going on in the United Kingdom. So, but you see the very same kind of social dysfunction among the lower classes, and it, among blacks are just more. A higher percentage of blacks are poor, and so the incentive effects that we've created in this society for non-family formation among lower income people, that affects blacks far more than it affects other people. But if you look at those statistics, you may have them right there in front of you. You know, you'll see that the American Indian and also Hispanic families have a very high out-of-wedlock childbearing rate too. And that, I think, has to do with the fact that they're low-income people. It doesn't have to do with them not caring about the family or not being able to figure out how to use contraception. I don't think that's the issue at all.
It, oddly, and I know you've pointed out this many times, it's the big, terrible irony at work in this thing, is that the impetus for the social revolution when it comes to redefining the family or defining the family out of existence has not come from people of moderate or low income or less education or a lower social standing. It's come from the elite.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. And yet when push comes to shove, your average woman with a doctorate or a law degree does, in fact, get married before she has kids. And the reason she does that is because the average woman with a doctorate or a law degree wants her child to go to Harvard or, you know, a high-status school, and she can't figure out how she's going to do that all by herself. And in point of fact, even if you have a great job and you're a single woman trying to get your kid from infancy into Harvard, that's going to be really hard, even if you have a lot of money, you know. So women with high aspirations for their kids are going to try to find a high-income husband to marry. And so what's happening to us is that we have a widening gap in family income and in the well-being of children, that to where people that are have high income, high education, they marry each other, and so their kids are quite advantaged because they start off with, you know, good quality parents in the first place, and then parents that are collaborating and working together. But people at the lower income levels are kind of starting from behind in the first place because they don't have as much income, they don't have as much education, and then the state has made it very difficult for people to see marriage as being in their interest. If you look at the income support programs that the government offers to poor people, you know, in a lot of cases people do the math and figure out it makes more sense to not get married, and so therefore they don't have the benefits of marriage working for them either. So we really have a widening gap between the rich and the poor in terms of the life chances of children. And it really has been driven by a set of elite ideologies that have tried to promote sexual liberation without really thinking through what this is going to mean in the long run.
So, I mean, when you look at the statistic like 72%, Jen,
yep,
you might be tempted to say there's no solution for this. This is a lost generation. Are there simple and I'm not talking here about quick. I'm just saying simple solutions to a statistic like 72% unwed motherhood.
Well, simple as I like how you said simple as opposed to quick. I mean, I think the first thing that we have to do is to stop discouraging marriage among the poor, and we have to start saying that getting married is a good thing, and that we expect people to get married. You know, that we have a social expectation that you get married before you have kids. Part of what has happened is that many poor people look at marriage like it's a fantasy, like they'd love to get married, but what they're looking at is kind of the wedding ceremony. And they're thinking, you know, I'm going to be queen for a day, and it's going to be wonderful, and it's going to be beautiful. But it's not really very realistic, the way that they're thinking about it. And nobody says to them, you know, look, you really ought to, you know, settle down and get married to somebody. But part of the problem, the reason this isn't simple, Todd, is that the separation of sex, childbearing, and marriage has created a lot of very bad behavior among both women and men. And so, you know, a lot of guys aren't marriage material anymore. So women are having kids because they want to have babies. You know, they don't want to give up having babies. And the men, because the men are not being asked to assume the responsibility of fatherhood, they're not maturing properly. They're not growing up in the way that married fatherhood usually induces a man to grow up and work harder and be more diligent and be more focused and less hanging around with the boys and all of those kinds of things that are well-documented changes in male behavior as a result of marriage. Nobody's asking that of people. And so really, I think one of the hardest things is going to be to establish those expectations of here's the way a proper guy behaves. This is the way. This is what a man ought to be like. This is what a woman ought to be like. We've lost any sight of the idea that we ought to be talking like that. And in fact, we've been hiding behind a kind of moral relativism where we're saying, well, the government shouldn't be. Who's the government to be telling people what to do and not do? Well, the fact is the government is sending messages implicitly and explicitly all the time about what is proper sexual behavior, but they're not messages that anybody really wants to defend, and so we kind of hide behind this sort of facade of moral neutrality.
With only about 30 seconds, how would you respond to someone who says, look, yeah, I see the statistics, but I know what's going to happen if we attempt any particular solution for this. It's going to be cries of racism.
Well, I think the thing to do is to start actually talking to real black people. I mean, there are a lot of black people who are just sick of this stuff. When I go to abstinence education meetings, for example, Todd, and I've been to quite a few of them now, when I go to crisis pregnancy workshops, you know, where I'm a speaker to talk to people about, to help train the ladies who are working with the women in crisis pregnancies, there are a lot of African-American women attending those things. There are a lot of African-American women who are very, very active in abstinence education, crisis pregnancy work, and all the rest of it, and marriage promotion. And these are young people, too, I'm talking about, not a bunch of old fogies. I mean, these are young people, very dynamic abstinence speakers and stuff. So I just don't think that's right. We've got to start talking to the people who share our values, regardless of their color.
When we come back, a few more questions for Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse on unwed black parenthood. Then we'll talk about the death penalty with Dr. Andrew Steinman.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Hey, St. Louis listeners. Our local affiliate, AM 1320 Bot Radio Network, lowers its signal power at 445 until the end of the year. But you can still listen to Issues Etc. full power at issuesetc.org. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org. Listen to what you want, when you want. Issues Etc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Are you uncomfortable with making an online credit card donation? Well, here's an option for you. Call me at 618-223-8382, and I'll personally take your credit card donation and process it for you. Hi, this is Craig Feitinger of Lutheran Public Radio. Call me today, 618-223-8382, and make a secure credit card donation to help support Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Welcome back. A few more minutes with Dr. Jennifer Roback. More is talking about unwed Black parenthood on this Thursday afternoon, November the 11th. Then we'll turn to the subject of the Bible and the death penalty. Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University, Chicago, will be our guest for the remainder of the program. Jennifer, you talk economics for a lot of years, and that entails also knowing a little bit of history. Someone looks at a statistic like 72%, and they say, look, I don't care how draconian the measures are. There's nothing that the government can do to change this. It's hopeless. How would you respond?
Well, you know, look, first of all, Tao, we have to understand that, we didn't get here overnight or even really by accident. I mean, when Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote his report about the Black family being in crisis and all of that kind of stuff, the out-of-wedlock childbearing rate for African-Americans was, I think, somewhere around the high 20%, 25, 28%, something like that, okay, in 1965. So it's not, you can't say there's like the legacy of slavery or something that's generating this thing, because the African American family used to be much more intact and much more solid than it is now. So if you ask what is the federal government doing, there are two things that they have been doing. One, it has been to increase the generosity of welfare payments, but in contingent on not having a man in the house. Because if there's a man in the house, he's supposed to provide for his own child. So what's happened is that the expectation that the father provides has been replaced with the expectation that the government provides. And that's why the poorer the person, the more those incentives impact them. So you've got to somehow stop doing that. The second thing the federal government has been doing is financing contraception and contraception education. So most people don't know this, but it's the federal government through Medicaid that gives out probably 70% of federal money to pay for family, so-called family planning services, comes through Medicaid. Well, the Medicaid requires that the states give contraception to anyone over the age of puberty with or without parental consent. In other words, if a state somewhere, you know, if Iowa decides that they want to have parental consent in order for a young person to get contraception, the federal government says, well, if you decide to do that, we're not going to give you any Medicaid money for doing that. And so what they've done is to take parental supervision out of teen sexuality. And they've done that quite deliberately, you see. So by the federal government saying that a 12-year-old can get contraception without her parents knowing it, the federal government is having a sex policy. You see what I mean, Todd? I mean, that is not a morally neutral position for them to say that. And so if the federal government is going to say sexual activity, contraceptive sexual activity, is an entitlement for 12-year-olds without parental notification, that is a moral statement. That is not morally neutral. So if they're allowed to say that, I don't see why the federal government couldn't, if it chose, turn around to say being married is a requirement for receiving certain kinds of aid for you and your children. You know, in other words, you can't say requiring marriage or supporting marriage is a unfair imposition of morality on people. And on the other hand, turn around and say blocking parents from knowing what their children are doing is a perfectly morally neutral thing to do. The state has been creating a kind of whole sexual policy that is national. They've nationalized all of sexual policy. The states have very little room to maneuver as a result of these Medicaid rules and so on. So there are a number of things that the federal government has done that have actively broken down the family of the among the poor people. And it's really got to stop. I mean, people have got to start talking about this and wake up to the fact that this didn't just happen. It's not like poor people said, oh, gosh, we don't want to get married anymore. That's not what's been happening. The federal government has been actively changing the incentives, and it's got to stop.
Two quick final questions. The first one from Carrie in Minnesota says, it shows that the church and society have become tolerant of people not marrying and having children, and that in the lower classes, we don't expect personal responsibility. I don't think that we can expect society to expect people to get married. So the church is the one that has to encourage it. Your thoughts there with about 30 seconds.
Well, she's right that the church has to encourage it, but I think we need to understand that the church has been completely marginalized from something that should be an area of prime concern of the church. You know, we're standing over on the sidelines, you know, kind of holding up signs and cheerleading or something, but the federal government has all the tools, including vast sums of money they've extracted from us that they get to pass out in the way that they choose to encourage the behavior that they like. So what we really have to do, I think, is to not allow ourselves to be marginalized from the decision-making process and not allow ourselves to be silenced with these claims that we're somehow trying to impose morality or impose religion on people. The federal government has been imposing its morality on people for a long time, and it's got to stop. So what the states are allowed to do is so minimal in comparison to what the federal government is doing. You know, what your local school board's allowed to do is completely minimal. Even if everybody in your town wants to tell the parents about, you know, the kids getting contraception or going off campus to get an abortion and so on, you know, the federal government has its rules. And so the maneuvering ability that we have is really very limited at this point. So we've got to do something as a church community to not simply encourage the right behavior, though we must do that, but we also really have to participate in the policymaking process.
Then with only 30 seconds, Jen, President Barack Obama is African-American. He was raised by a single mother. Do you think he should have something in particular to say about this to Black Americans and to all Americans?
Well, honestly, you know, the best thing you can say about Barack Obama is that he is a married man who goes to work every day wearing a coat and tie, and he's got his kids living with him, and he's taking care of them. You know, I mean, so his life is a great example and an important example, a significant example, apart from anything that he chooses to say or not say. That fact of his life and his success and everything is extremely valuable, I think, to the African American community. And you know, so in a way, I don't care what he says. You know, I mean, I'm going to argue with him if he says things that I don't agree with. I'm going to continue to argue with him, but at the same time, be grateful that he has achieved what he has achieved by doing the right thing and by getting married to his kids' mama and staying married to them. And you know, in that way, he's a very important symbol for everybody. And I think that the fact that we have an African-American president who is married and who is a father and who is, by all accounts, a good father, that allows African-Americans the ability to speak out about this issue without thinking that they're somehow betraying their race, you know, if you see what I mean. You know, in other words, America, whatever you might think about America being racist or not being racist, it's certainly less racist given that we have a Black president. And I think that makes it easier for African Americans to start speaking out about these things and for them to have a dialogue inside their community. The article that you gave us to talk about, Todd, actually that's what it was about. It was about an African American woman who has been trying to encourage people within her own community to get married before they have kids. And I think that is all to the good. And if Obama's part of that, then I think it's great.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder and president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find a link to the blog and website of the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Todd.